Welcome to SecurityGuyRadio.com, SecurityGuyTV.com, our new brand. There we go again. I'm getting tired.
Yeah, I bet. It's been a long couple
days. At Infuse 2017.
Infuse, yeah.
Caesars Palace Las Vegas, Guidance Software.
There we go.
But their parent company is?
Parent company of Guidance.
I always get it mixed up.
Good question. I don't know, actually.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. That was
sure
a great
enough,
interview.
Yeah.
What's your name, sir?
Jake Williams.
And
Jake Williams.
What company are you with?
Well, I'm out here with Sands.
We did a lot of training with Sands.
We
did an interview. It's a great company.
Yep, totally. And I'm an instructor and course author at Sands.
Okay.
And then I also separately run a consultancy, Rendition InfoSec.
Now, is that what it sounds like?
It is actually what it sounds like.
All right.
Kind of the name, was a play on the extraordinary rendition, and our tagline is security by any legal means, right?
So I love that.
We're outside of the, a lot of security companies look at the, kind of the, you know, check the box kind of stuff. We're not that. Most of my employees are former government hackers.
Realtor
agency stuff.
Yeah.
And so, again, it's a really, really awesome set of talent there. And again, really outside the box security solutions, chasing down the APT, all that good stuff. So
there's the black hat guys.
So it's interesting. You know, when you think about your black hat guys in a governmental sense, right? You know, they spend a ton of money building this malware, building these tools. And as they go and they hack other nation states, and if we've got a target that we're interested in, you better believe somebody else is interested
sure,
in it too.
Exactly right.
And so one of their first jobs that they have to do is assess whether or not someone else is already on a particular target. That's their first job. And so
right.
to do that, they're doing incident response. Unlike having, you know, guidance software or other stuff that, you know, requires lots of bandwidth, they don't have that. And so as we look at this, it's really, for us, we find that those people are great incident responders because they know specifically what to look for. Plus, they know where they hide, and that's generally where other attackers are hiding too. So it's a really interesting crossover in skill set.
So I'm going to think of you as the real deal.
That's a good plan.
Not the off-the-shelf box,
no.
which in itself is a solution, right? But
it's a solution.
This is a final end solution, kind of. Very interesting.
Yep.
Now, how do you translate all this secret squirrel knowledge information you have over to Sands? And you just describe what you did for them again?
Yeah, so for Sands, I actually am a contributing author on four different courses for Sands.
Okay.
I'm co-author on the memory forensics course with Alyssa Torres. There. I actually work on the cyber threat intelligence course as well as the malware reversing course. And then separately from the digital forensics track, I work on the pen test track where I'm a contributing author on the advanced exploit development course. And that's where we go hunt for vulnerabilities in software and teach people how to exploit those vulnerabilities.
So my last guest, and some other guests talk about this, you know, most apps, they use open code, open source code, why reinvent the wheel? And I'm not worried about security. That's your problem over there. I'm the developer. You're the security guy. Why is that still going on? It drives me insane. I don't get it.
And
you're hunting for vulnerabilities.
Yep.
When the vulnerability should have been coded out of the thing in the first place and not put in there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, yes, except it's harder. It's really way harder to do than it is to talk about, right?
Some people just put the security on after the fact, right?
Oh, well, there's no question about that. Yeah. So there are, and we deal with a lot of startups, actually, that at Rendition, we've dealt with a lot of startups that are building software and they just don't have the budget for security, right? So they look and they say,
okay,
we've got to get this thing to market so
right.
that we get our Series B funding. Right. And they say, look, we recognize the risk. Really smart people. They say, recognize the risk. We know that if we get a serious security incident, the company's tanked. But we also know that given the budget that we have today, we'll never get the product to market ever if we have to spend all the money doing
all
certification,
right.
accreditation, et cetera.
So I didn't look at the security part as being that expensive. So educate me. Tell me, why would it be a budget breaker?
Well,
a startup.
Yeah, so I think probably the number one thing that it comes down to is is the developer cost, right?
Okay.
Getting developers that can develop code that compiles are a dime a dozen. Developers that can do it securely, right? And then the people to come in and audit that after the fact, that's where you start getting a little bit more expensive.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I kind of thought there were two groups. Like, here's the security guy sitting down and the developer guy sitting down. And the developer writes his code and the security guy says, you know what, I think we got to do something else. But it is one and the same person if you want to go that level, I guess.
You can get to that level.
Yeah.
We don't ever want a developer saying, I know security, therefore my code is secure.
Right.
You still want an independent audit, a third party to look at.
Because
just like trying to proofread your own paper in school, you know it's impossible to do. Same thing with the code, right? So
paper, I put a show on YouTube when I spell things wrong. I'm terrible at
it. Oh, hey, you and me both, right? So, yeah, totally. Spell check for the win. But
right, so vulnerability hunting, this intrigues me. I like the way it sounds. Tell me what we do. Tell me what that is.
Well, so there's a couple of ways that we do this, right? So there's a, for one, we look for insecure functions that don't have range checking, for instance. If we don't have range checking, we might say, for instance, here's a, we've got a 100-byte buffer. Here, let me shim 200 bytes into that buffer. And so we've got a buffer overflow there because there's no check for the size of that value. There's also, and that stuff's starting to fall away. We're starting to have more and more protections against that.
Right.
Microsoft and the GNU Foundation, GCC, the folks that build the compilers, they're getting better at, even if the developer makes the mistake, they're getting better at protecting it from being exploitable. And so what we're seeing then is that the same vulnerability that would have been would have resulted in code execution for the attacker now is only resulting in a crash, which is still a problem but it's not me gaining access to your machine.
Yeah,
right?
That's interesting.
And so we're seeing a lot of that go on. And again, this can be exactly the same code, no modification to the code at all, just recompiling with a new compiler protects you from that type of vulnerability.
Oh, interesting. So yep. I look at this as it's all creativity to me, right? It's ingenuity.
Totally.
It's in that environment, because I came from the studios.
Yep.
You don't put restrictions on the creative people, because
no,
then they're not
definitely.
Creative.
Right, right, definitely.
So you got to balance that, though, right?
Yes.
And I think, you know what? If I was in charge of everything, not me personally, but some guy might think, you know what we need? We need coding standards. And here's best practices in coding, and not making it a law, of course. But
sure.
Say, you know, here's a standardization for the industry, and let's all follow that. I think we lose innovation.
Oh, there's no question.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, no question.
You ever heard of ONVIF?
I have not.
So ONVIF is, I forgot what it stands for, but they're the group that, you know, Sony cameras, Panasonic cameras,
totally.
They all get together and they say, you know what? We're going to share a little bit of our secrets. And all these cameras are now plug and play. And all these cameras now do not have password as the default password. And,
got it.
And that makes the industry better in the camera business, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always used to think, wow, why don't we get some organization like that for coding? And I thought, it's a good concept, but I think it would stifle the creativity. I probably wouldn't work.
Well, you'd also have to train developers on it, right? Which would raise the cost
that's
to do the
cost.
Development.
That's right, right.
Right. And so now that developer that's been trained in that particular standard costs more, just like any security standard.
Yeah.
Right? I'll tell you one of the other things we do that's really interesting with exploit development. I'm sure you've heard of Microsoft's Patch Tuesday, right? So every month there's Patch Tuesday. In the exploit development community, we have a saying for the following day we call Exploit Wednesday. Because when Microsoft or any company, it's not unique to Microsoft, just that it always comes out on Tuesday with them, they release the patch. And what we'll actually do, and we teach this at the SANS Institute for people that are doing legitimate work, of course not bad people, they're people that are auditing code. But basically what they'll do is we'll take a look at the new code, we'll take a look at the old code, right? So we have the old pre-patch, and then we have the after the patch. And we'll basically disassemble, and we'll look for the differences in the code.
Oh,
and we know that when you patched, added some check that, and we know that wherever that check is at, that's what ultimately is keeping the code secure.
That's great detective work.
Yep.
That's
and
brilliant.
What's Microsoft and Adobe are two companies that have actually tried to fight us back on that. And after they put the patch in, they'll make a couple of other, in some cases. Some cases they forget or they're, you know, deadline push for the patch. They'll try and make a couple of other minor changes so that it doesn't spotlight on one individual change for the patch. So instead of having one, you've got 10, and one of them is actually a bug, and the other ones are just them flipping some bits around. So
it's a decoy for you?
Decoys, exactly.
Are they trying to avoid embarrassment or what?
No. They want to slow us down, right?
Why?
So, well, because
aren't you helping?
Oh, not a bit. Not in this case, right? So in this case, they've released a patch.
Yeah.
It's no longer zero-day vulnerability. It's what we call one-day vulnerability, meaning that they've released the patch. Now, basically, I'm trying to weaponize that vulnerability, write an exploit for it,
right,
so that I can use that to do security auditing, penetration testing, et cetera. If you haven't applied the patch as a consumer, and many of our organizations we work with are on 30 and 60-day patch cycles, if I can develop that in 24, 48, 72 hours, I've got a great time period, even if it's a week. Right?
Yeah.
I've got a great time period in a 30 to 60-day patch cycle with which I can still use this vulnerability that technically has been patched, but you haven't applied the patch yet. Right?
Right.
Still to gain access on these systems. Right. And so in this case, you're not helping Microsoft at all. They totally want to decoy you out and try to raise the cost for you to do this.
That's
so
hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I remember we were at Disney. I developed their anti-piracy program.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hard security, night vision goggles and guards. And then the IT guys would do things like make 100 million copies of Finding Nemo and stick it up on all those Juarez sites and everything like that.
Oh, yeah.
And you never knew where the real one was anymore.
Right, right.
Where the real pirated was. Total decoy stuff, right?
Yep.
Very effective. Very effective.
Indeed.
So that's really interesting. So do you bring this knowledge from Rendition over to Sans? I'm educated in 5 minutes, and now I think my reptilian brain has gone up a little bit, and I know some things. But how do you transfer that stuff? Because some of your stuff seems proprietary. It seems like you're doing stuff nobody else does. And do you want to teach that to people? Because now your business is affected. How do you balance all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a balance. Look, you know, I think that there's some stuff that I do at the business that we don't talk about at Sands. Obviously, I don't talk about my clients at Sands because
sure. We're
all under non-disclosure. Nobody wants to, if we've done an incident response or a security assessment, nobody wants their name thrown out there. But, you know, at Sands, every one of us that are instructors, we're all practitioners, right? We all do something in the field.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the things that makes us unique there. So, you know, I'll teach maybe 10 weeks a year, but the rest of the time I'm out in the field doing that work. You know, what I do bring to Sands that I find is really, really effective for students is I bring the stories of what we've been doing in the field, obviously anonymized for, right? But so as a slide pops up, you know, where I should be talking about, you name it, physical security, right? I could read about standards about how, you know, badges are most appropriate if they're worn here and the, you know, fence should be this high and who knows what else. Or I can tell you how we broke into a customer facility last week, right? And so, you know, and how some of those controls would have made it more difficult for us. And one has a very lasting impression, the other does not, right? And so that's basically how I bring that to, you know, if you look at me, you know, if you come to one of my courses, I can tell you that, and my students will tell you as well, I hate reading slides. And so basically I come in and tell a story, click, 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 you know, okay, well that story covered these 12 slides, tell another story, and we kind of
I still remember stories from the police academy that kept me alive.
Oh, totally.
To this day.
Yeah.
I don't remember the code section of the training. I remember that guy was trying to kill police officers because blah, 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 and look for this in the field. And I did.
And that's exactly it.
It's very powerful.
Very effective.
Very
good. Yep. So,
name one more time.
Jake Williams, Rendition InfoSec.
Is it renditioninfosec.com?
Yeah, it is. Actually, we've got a shortened version of it because I know that's tough to spell.
Yeah.
It's rsec.us, rsec.us.
RSEC, I like that too.
Yep. So.
Now, do you have a secret site that nobody knows about? You must have one. Don't
tell actually,
me
believe it or not, we do. So, as you mentioned this, right? So, we were, have you ever, I'm sure you dealt with cyber attribution or have heard of the whole, like, who's hacking? You know, is it the North Koreans that are responsible
exactly
for?
Right.
Yeah, so
it's all baloney to me.
It's all baloney, absolutely. And look, honestly, most cyber attribution is. We got sick of people asking us about this, and so we stood up a site called WhoHackedUs.com. Right, so WhoHackedUs.com. It's completely randomized cyber attribution information. Kind of funny, right? So that's our secret website.
I'm going to take a look at that.
There you go.
A lot of fun. Thanks for coming on Security Guy TV.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Great conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yep.